This is Weekend Edition. I'm Leanne Hansen. When Granada Television first asked Jeremy Brett to play Sherlock Holmes, the British actor was not particularly enthused.
I remember I drove away from the dinner when I was asked, and I went with my son, David. And he said, "Dad, you don't want to do it, do you?" And I said, "No, I don't. I really don't want to do it. I think it's been done. I think it's been done so many times. I just think it's an old chestnut. I can't see any point in trying to do it anymore."
Jeremy Brett did not think he had the stuff to play Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's famous detective. At the time, he was a romantic lead in Shakespeare and wooed Audrey Hepburn as Freddy in the film My Fair Lady. Besides, Sherlock Holmes had been portrayed by some of the finest actors of the century: William Gillette, Ellie Norwood, Arthur Wantner, and, of course, Basil Rathbone. Intimidating competition. But Jeremy Brett eventually changed his mind and is now doing his sixth series as Holmes. The Casebook of Sherlock Holmes premiered this week on PBS stations across the country as part of the mystery series. What prompted the change was Brett's rereading of the entire canon, the 54 short stories and 4 novels written by Doyle about Sherlock Holmes.
And I discovered all sorts of things that I could do if I had had the opportunity to do it. So I said yes, with enormous temerity and a certain amount of fear and an element of excitement. We approached the scripts. I said, "But you've asked me to do Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes. These aren't Sherlock Holmes Doyle stories. I mean, the adapter's gone so far away." And the script editor said, "Jeremy, you're here to act. Just get on with it." And I tipped the table over, and my Dover soul landed in his lap. And that was the beginning of the tussle. I used to take the whole canon with me to every beginning of each film and fight for Doyle. After about a year and a half, I said, "Listen, if you don't start taking care of me, I may lose interest," because it was such a tussle. But then Granada Studios stepped in and were so remarkable and wonderful and gave me 2 weeks rehearsal instead of the one, so the first week I could fight for Doyle, and the second week I could work with my fellow actors. And that's basically how it's been ever since.
One of the things that you seem to do that other actors that have portrayed the role have not is play up the less than pleasant aspects of his character. Even with Basil Rathbone, you had the feeling that there was...
Well, Basil Rathbone, first and foremost, is my Sherlock Holmes.
He is?
Yes, because he was the person I first saw. And I can't see me, of course. So he is my Sherlock Holmes.
But do you try to do what he does or try to avoid what he does in order to make it your own? You do want to make it your own.
Well, we are... A few of us in England, we are what we call becomers. In other words, you become the person you're playing. Rather like Stanislavski. Not the method, because the method's slightly different. But you become the creature, the person you're playing. In other words, if I'm a sponge, you squeeze the liquid of yourself out and draw in the liquid of the creature of the person you're playing. And so I had to try and give birth to him. I made terrible mistakes. I'm so miscast. I'm a romantic, heroic actor. So I was terribly aware that I had to hide an awful lot of me. And in so doing, I think I look quite often brusque, or maybe sometimes even slightly rude. In fact, Dame Jean Conan Doyle, Doyle's daughter, who was a great personal friend of mine, did once say to me, "I don't think my father meant you-know-who to be quite so rude." And I said, "I'm terribly sorry, Dame Jean. I'm just trying to hide me." She did say a lovely thing to me when I did the play in 1988, which was really to celebrate you-know-who's birthday, who was meant he's 100, ha-ha. For the man who never existed, it's extraordinary to celebrate a birthday. And she did come to the play, and she did write me a sweet letter in which she said, "You are the Holmes of my childhood." And that, for me, is the ultimate accolade.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Who?
The detective.
Professor Presbrey. My card.
221B. hardly an address to inspire confidence.
Well, I've never sought to inspire confidence in others. I have quite enough of my own. May I introduce my colleague, Dr. Watson?
Certainly not. You may leave at once, the pair of you. A common detective and his accomplice. Really?
He is described as an emotionally cold character, but I think one of the hallmarks of your performance is that you bring a passion to the role. It's not an overt passion, but it's a passion that comes, for example, when you gloat, or you know who gloats when he's defeated, an opponent, or a temper that flares when people are not listening to you or don't understand what it is that you're saying. There's this passion underneath this brusqueness and this rudeness, which is what I think makes him real, which is why your portrayal has been so...
Well, I was talking about becoming. What I mean by that is an inner life. Watson describes you-know-who as a mind without a heart. That's hard to play, hard to become. So what I did was to invent an inner life. I mean, I know what his nanny looked like, for example. She was covered in starch. She probably scrubbed him, but never kissed him. I don't think he probably saw his mother till he was about 8. Maybe he caught a touch of the fragrance of her scent and the rustle of her dress. I guess college days were fairly complicated because he was quite isolated. He probably saw a girl across the quadrangle and fell in love. But she never looked at him. So he closed that door. And he became a brilliant fencer, of course, as we know, and a master at boxing. Brilliant athlete. And many more little tiny little details which you have to kind of make up to fill this kind of well of... that Doyle so brilliantly left out, because he built this extraordinary edifice, and if you're going to try... I mean, of course, it's much better read. That's the truth. Doyle's works are better read. If you're going to be rash enough to try and bring him into life by the visual arts, he's even better on radio. I'd rather listen to him than see him. Seeing is limiting, you know.
You do develop a body language for him, though. I mean, whenever he thinks, he makes a pyramid with his fingers and he puts them up in front of his face. And he has eccentric, rather, gestures of the hand.
It's all Doyle.
It's all Doyle.
All Doyle. You see, I couldn't believe it. It's all there. He says, there's one moment which really threw me. He says, Holmes wriggles in his seat and roars with laughter. You see, I'd never even thought of Holmes laughing. So I had to go on an extraordinary journey of discovery, and it's all there in Doyle. And what is so extraordinary to me is that no one's done Doyle before, and I find that bewildering.
Watson, come at once, if convenient. If inconvenient, come all the same. Holmes, I got your note, and it is inconvenient. Damned inconvenient.
Your old wound is troubling you.
No.
I prefer to differ. Your step was uneven on the stairs.
I have a full surgery, Holmes.
You must excuse a certain abstraction of mind, Watson.
I see.
It's a tangled scheme. I've been looking for a loose end which might unravel it. One such might reside in the question, does Professor Presbury's daughter wake or dream?
I'm summoned here for no more than this. Holmes, you're prying into the affairs of a perfectly respectable family.
Why is Bennett so reluctant to tell the truth?
Loyalty, it's as plain as a pikestaff.
Let us hope so. Yet he wrote to me under duress. You notice his handwriting? The crossing of the T's with such deep indentation? And then upon his arrival, his endeavors to call the whole thing off. No, there's more to this than meets the eye.
I do not agree. This case is unworthy of you.
In the course of producing these series and acting in these series, was it difficult for you to change Watson's midstream?
Well, it was devastating. My darling David Burke came to me and said, I must go home. My son, Tom, is 2, and I must be with him growing up. And I said, of course, absolutely understand. And So he went back to Anna, his sweet wife, and little Tom. And I stood and waved goodbye at the station in Manchester, which is where the studios are located in England. And thought, now what do? I've lost to Watson, my bestest friend. And, one of my best friends, David Burke. And it was Anna, his wife, who said, there's a man with a cast of iron rather like yours, David. And Edward arrived. Of course, I'd worked with at the National Theatre. He's Sir Cedric Hardwick's son, by the by.
But for you playing with Edward Hardwick, did you have to develop a new relationship, or did he just... Was he able to then take on the cloak of Watson enough so that you're sure?
Well, Ed was a very, very remarkable man. One of the nicest people I've ever met in my life. And he wanted to fit in. So he watched the previous 13 films, decided to try and look a little like David Burke as much as he could, bless him. So he put on a rug, a toupee, and put lifts in his heels. And the first film we shot together was The Abbey Grange. And we were running across a field. And these heels were too high, so he was slipping and sliding. And I said, oh, Edward, take them out. I'll bend my knees for the rest of the film. So that's how we adapted and heeled it in.
Oh. You had a personal tragedy between seasons. Your wife died.
Joni,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, well, Joni... the reason I did Aren't We All was to be with her. I knew at the end of the final problem in 84 that she had cancer. And the lights really went out in my life. And I didn't want to do it anymore. I didn't see any point. And we were going to do all the treatment in England, and then we decided to do it in Boston because she worked for WGBH. You know, she created Mystery.
I didn't know that.
Yes. She created Classic Theatre. And anyway, I lost her on July the 4th, 1985. And I went back to England when the play finished. It didn't finish till the 23rd. I don't know how I did those performances. And so goodbye to the children. And I was contracted to start again on September the 3rd of that year. And they said, well, Jamie, may help if you get back on the bike. Is that an expression you use? In other words, if you get back on the bike...
Back on the horse.
That's
same,
right.
Same phrase.
And I did the next five films with the most appalling ill grace, I'm afraid. I mean, I just didn't want to do them. And then I had what is now known, because of the TV Guide published it over here, I had an almighty breakdown. And when I came through that, thanks entirely to my darling son David, who was a valiant friend to me through that, I got back on the bike again. I remember saying, if I can get to Manchester, I'll be all right. And then I made the sign of four, and I began to feel better, and then I began to feel better with Holmes, and I wasn't quite so cross with him, because I blamed him a little.
You blamed him?
Well, I was working, you see, so far away from Joan, and it had taken up so much of our last, I discovered to be our last few years, and time is the great healer. And now, actually, Caleb, my eldest, my legacy from Joan, says that I'm looking much better than he's seen me in years. I saw him 3 weeks ago in California. So slowly, 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 you never get over a loss like that. You get used to it, but you never get over it.
You've done 34 hours of the
I've done
stories.
34 films. I can't remember. There's three two-hour films. I've just finished 3 weeks ago a two-hour film. And two others, The Sign of Four and The Study in Scarlet, Hound of the Baskervilles. And the rest are one-hour films.
Mm-hmm. How many stories are there left? I mean,
well, I'm going to complete the canon, thanks to Peter Spina and Granada Studios.
Completing the canon? And then what? I mean, then you will be able to leave him behind.
Well, I don't mind now. I mean, And there was a time when people would say, how do you enjoy playing Holmes? And I would say I wouldn't cross the street to meet him. I then discovered that, of course, I meant that he wouldn't cross the street to meet me. Then when I was doing the play, which taught me a very great deal, because I was in touch with people, because filming is quite isolated, and I realized how many children were seeing him and how what a hero he was to them, I thought, oh, my, didn't know that. So I thought, my goodness, I have that joy of doing it for children. I think I know why the children love him, and that's because Sir Arthur Conan Doyle endowed Holmes with all the sensibilities of a child up to the age of eight. Then, at the age of eight, of course, you're told not to look out of the window, get on with your Latin syntax, and they begin to diminish those extra senses. Uh-huh. Holmes has them.
Do you think you've learned anything about the powers of observation that he had that you need for your own art to become these characters that you play?
No.
No.
No. Somebody asked me the other day, do I dream about him? Okay. Mercifully, no.
Don't want to take your work home?
No, it's not a miracle. No, my dreams are... I still have my little dog in my dreams, Mr. Binks. My companion. I call him my hand of heaven, actually.
Ah, yeah.
He died 16 years ago. So anyone comes too close, like you know who, woof, woof. No, he never comes in. Mercifully. And heavens to Betsy, the day's enough.
Jeremy Brett. The Casebook of Sherlock Holmes can be seen for the next 5 weeks on the PBS series Mystery. This is NPR's Weekend Edition, directed by Ned Wharton, edited by Anne Goodwin-Sides, and produced by Robert Molesky, with production help from Walter Ray Watson, Rich Dean, and Connie Drummer. Our technical director is Liz Buechel, with engineers Marty Curcius, Mark Busick, Rima Snyder, and Norb Gallery. Our theme music was written by B.J. Lederman, with variations by Steph Scajari. Executive producer for Morning News is Robert Ferranti. I'm Leanne Hansen.